Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the corporate jungle. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, industry titans step up to the mic, sharing their epic journeys. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their careers, creating a symphony of success. This isn't just another interview show. It's where truth bombs are dropped and secrets are revealed. So grab your conductor's baton, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next huge hit of your career. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Drop the Needle podcast. I am your host, Jim Allstott, and I'm so happy you all decided to join us. As a matter of fact, I know you'll be happy you joined us, because we have a one-of-a-kind guest with us today. Allow me to give you a little background on who we have with us. We have celebrity coach Jennifer Grace, who was named Miami's number one life coach by New Times in both 2015 and 2017. She's a keynote speaker, radio host, Hay House author, whose book, Directing Your Destiny, was published in 2013. She's delivered a TEDx talk titled, Why Mindfulness Should Be Just as Important as Math in Our School Systems. She's also worked with corporations as a mindset coach, where she's developed the program known as the CIJ Culture Catalyst Program. And some of her clients include companies like Prada, Facebook, Turner, HCI, Y-Code, and EO. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Ms. Jennifer Grace.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for being here. I'm so happy you could make it today. This is fantastic.
I'm excited.
Me too. What a treat for everyone. So I guess after the introduction, everybody has a real understanding of your background, what it is that you've been involved with. And one of the things that was left off of that list of accomplishments is friend. And I am so happy to call you a friend too. And that's what makes this so special for me today, is to have one of my close friends on, a mentor, and all of the wonderful accolades you could imagine coming through right now. And it's truly a joy.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you again. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about creativity and the importance of creativity in business. Mm-hmm. And the definition of creativity, as I found, was creativity is the ability to make or otherwise bring into existence something new, whether a new solution to a problem, a new method or device, or a new artistic object or form. Mm-hmm. So I guess where I'd like to start with, as far as the questions are concerned, is what inspired you to create the CIJ Culture Catalyst Program, and how does it aim to foster creativity in business?
Well, I would say I recreated it, actually. The original course from Stanford University was developed by Dr. Michael Ray in 1979, and he originally wanted it at Stanford business students to have it because he saw them thinking so linearly. And he wanted to give them tools and processes for them to think out of the box and more creatively. Then this training was taken. It was given to 400 widows who had lost their spouses in 9/11. And they took the curriculum out of Stanford, gave it to the spouses of 9/11. And it was so transformative for them for other reasons. And then they just started having the training for regular folks like us. And when I came to the training, became certified, got certified in it, and then became the lead train the trainer, I was just really working with the general public. And it was almost like I wanted to go back to its intention of giving this to the business world. You know, it was called Creativity and Business at Stanford. So I was like, let's get this back into corporations. Because I felt similarly as Dr. Michael Ray, in the fact that I saw that people in corporations were experiencing a lot of burnout, losing their light, their life's purpose, not being fully expressed in their authenticity. And I just felt like we needed to regenerate this curriculum and get it back almost to where it belonged.
Sure. Well, that makes sense, of the full circle on that.
Yeah.
For sure. So I know that I read that definition that was like a dictionary definition, but I'm curious how you would define creativity in the context of a business setting. And I know that we talked a little bit about the importance of it, but if you drill down a little bit more with the burnout and different things like that, why do you believe that it's so important now?
Well, especially now, I think it's even more important with the different things that have disrupted various industries. You know, so whether it's AI disruption, whether it was the pandemic disruption, where it's crypto disruption, whatever those disruptions are, and these new ways of doing things in life just kind of makes people freeze like deers in headlights.
Sure.
And we're in a time that things are moving so quickly that we have to adapt and then reinvent. And if we don't have a muscle and we don't even identify with being creative beings, because we're reserving that for the artist, the actor, the dancer, the writer, and we're not thinking right. that in a business sense, it's actually going to lead to more burnout and more stress. So to empower people inside of corporations to really own their creativity and empower them to think, you know, outside of the box and be able to move with the moment and come up with innovation and new ways of doing things, this is, you know, what we need to move forward as a society.
So you see this really as a priority then in businesses?
Certainly.
Preventative Absolutely. Medicine almost.
Yeah. Yeah. For so many reasons, like especially with the entrance of AI now, you know, we're going to have to get really creative about how we can use it as a tool, how we can reinvent different departments and things that are happening in the world. I mean, especially in Hollywood, you know, where I come from, that's completely been turned on its head with AI, with the writing community, with graphic design, with web, with marketing. Anybody who's in marketing, it's completely reinventing that. So it's like, how do we meet the moment instead of getting upset about it? How can we use it as a tool, but also make sure that authenticity stays intact? And we are still using our creativity and not just, you know, allowing this to take over.
Sure. So then how does a program, or I should say, how does this program help organizations identify and overcome those barriers to creativity and risk aversion? Because we're talking about AI and other things that might be creeping in. So that risk aversion could be losing out on that. It could be the bureaucracy, or it could be a lack of resources. How does that help the program? How does the program help in that regard?
Well, I think one of the components is creativity, but the core of this program is to empower people to trust themselves and to turn out all the noise and to really go inward. And when you're working in a collective of people that are trusting themselves, respecting themselves, where they're letting go of judgment and expectations of others, not in the sense of a corporate, like you have an expectation to show up at work, but something starts to happen that is very organic, and it has people work together in such a way where it creates group mind, group flow,
collaboration, right?
Collaboration. Right. When people, you know, take some of the masks off and go inward and really check in, like, who am I? What do I get to contribute? You know, what is my vision with the mission of this company? Many times we're just on autopilot. We're doing what we're doing, where we're getting what we're getting. And when there's a disruption in an industry, we have to stop. We have to stop, get clear, check in, and let go of the expectation of how it used to be so that we can reinvent how it's going to be.
You know, so you had just mentioned wearing masks, and I find that to be extremely interesting because I guess fortunately and unfortunately see on a regular basis, because I do work in the corporate environment regularly, and not to call anybody out on the carpet or anything like that, but the next comment I'm going to make is genuine in that there are a lot of masks that are worn out there in the corporate world. And it seems, I don't know why. I don't know why there's that need to feel that, okay, I've got to be somebody completely different. I've got to be this projection or this image that really isn't me. And I just find it incredibly interesting that that occurs. And you would think that as we progress in society, in humanity, and in business, and all of these other things, that there would be more clarity, more, you know, getting rid of that fog of false or falseness or whatever it, whatever you want to call it. But it's pervasive.
Yeah.
What I see. And I'm wondering, in your background and in your experiences, when you run into something like that, what do you think that that's all about? Why is that?
Well, I think people confuse the role for the mask, right? We have certain roles that we play. I'm going to be maybe one way as a mother, another way as a best friend running into my friend at college, another way when I'm presenting in front of a large audience. And then depending on the audience, I may play a different role. And that's fine, right? We all have these different facets of who we are. But what the mask is about is really a lack of authenticity, of not, like you said, false, right? To not be true. And there's a fascinating book. It's called The Culture Code. It studies the seven most highest performing teams in the world. And the three things that they all have in common is that they're vulnerable with each other. They're authentic with each other. And they use their creativity. So this is precisely what, you know, coming up in the last, whatever, 50 years, there's been this context of what it's supposed to be like, but yet these barriers are being broken and these teams are creating extraordinary results that are really actually doing quite the opposite of that.
You know, and it's interesting. So I love that we're talking like this, because when we're talking about something and it's not a scripted event or anything like that, we're able to get to some of the topics that a lot of people are dealing with right now as it relates to their leadership teams and things of that nature. And I can tell you firsthand in one of my coaching sessions, because I also do corporate, well, I really specialize in corporate coaching, but in one of the sessions for one of the companies that I'm working with in their leadership team, I was talking about what I view as being part of a well-rounded leader, a, and I'll use air quotes, good leader, is vulnerability. And I think that there's, we talked about the masks, and now we talk about vulnerability. I think there's a belief that you can't be vulnerable. You can't say, I'm sorry. You can't say, I fucked up. My bad. You can't say those things because it's viewed as a weakness. When I believe, and I know others believe, it's just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You're human. There's a connection there that you can learn from and grow from that is, if let's put it this way, if you don't show vulnerability and truth, I think you miss out on an opportunity for growth. Not
Absolutely.
Only for yourself, but also your team, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. And I think this is why, you know, there's so much problems in many industries with retention is because yes. people are not willing to be vulnerable with each other and they're not feeling that connection. And when people feel connected to the other people that they work with, because think about this, we're at work more than we are at home in our waking hours.
Mm-hmm.
So people want to be happy at work. They want to be well at work. And part of wellness is connection. And if they're feeling a disconnection to their management, to their coworkers, there's no fulfillment. And so this is a core need of human beings is connection. It's one of the basic needs is to right. feel that you belong and you're connected. And so we're missing the mark on this because somebody decided that everybody was supposed to be in a suit and tie and buttoned up and speaking a certain way. And, you know, even let's go back to Mad Men, right? Like the way right. that it was,
yes.
the language yeah. that we used and yeah. it was fake. You know, it was all right. fake. So what they're finding now is fake doesn't stand the test of time. Vulnerability, connection, you know, that's how you build teams.
Authenticity, so, like you said, that there yeah, too, right?
Yeah. So this is what's really needed and it's what's required to change a corporate culture. You know, we're not going into these companies just to work with the leadership, you know, the C-suite, we're going right. in and we're working with everybody from the sales staff down on the floor to the CEO at the top. Because if you don't have everybody in the same culture and languaging, it doesn't work. You know, right. we're even taking this into school systems, but we want the teachers, the administrators, the parents, and the students all to have this common way of beingness and languaging so that it can be this cohesive ecosystem. Right. You know, it's like the Navy SEALs get this. They actually yes. get this,
yes,
right?
The hive mentality. Yes,
exactly. The group mind, group flow. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, besides the fact that they're now doing the things that we teach in the business course, you know, meditation, mindfulness, they're putting their Navy SEALs into flow tanks and putting in binaural beat meditation to accelerate the learning of the enemy language that they have to learn. Normally it takes 6 months. Now it takes 6 weeks. So they're doing all of these non-ordinary, you know, states of consciousness practices in right. order for them to actually connect. And when they go into enemy territory, they are able to not speak to one another. They literally move as one. So, you know, these practices that we're bringing into corporations are being used with top executives at Google, with the entire yes. company at Prada. They're being used with Navy SEALs. There's a great book called Stealing Fire
yes.
that I'm
yes.
quoting right now, speaking into this, and it's fascinating. So it's like, you know, creativity is all about getting into flow state. And how do you accelerate flow state? It's by practicing non-ordinary states of consciousness, which is precisely what we start to deliver in this curriculum. And it's very counterintuitive. You know, like, let's go out for right. a bunch of drinks after work. Like, what if we went to a meditation?
Yeah, let's go to
so
yoga.
So that we can be more connected, you know?
Right, yeah. No, that makes, well, to me, it makes sense having been involved with this for a while, but that was, you sparked that, the memory from the book
Stealing Fire.
Yes. When they were talking about going to the mind gym, the SEALs going to the mind gym. And, one of the other authors, that I listen to a lot and I'm hesitant to say read because I get, ribbed for listening to books on tape. That's my preferred method, or reading along with it as I listen, because I can do it. I can read a book doing anything then, driving, yes, cutting the grass, what have you. But that's one of the things with Jocko Willink is another one of those subscribers to that, because Jocko was a U.S. Navy SEAL commander, and he talks about that and mindfulness and the importance of mindfulness. Because if let's say that they're out on the mission, and these are literally life and death situations, right, where we fantasize and we over dramatize our situations where we go, oh, that's killing me. Yeah, well, in their instance it could. But that's when you were talking about being mindful. You have to be present. What's going on right now, not what happened a few minutes ago, or what might happen. You have to be aware of your surroundings. It's situational awareness. SA is what they talk about, and which is, again, mindfulness, right? Mm-hmm. That's being present. That's being right there, not moving forward, not moving backwards. You're in the moment and you're listening. I'm sorry to get off on that tangent, but I mean, I love that conversation because it's not woo-woo, as you can see and hear from other organizations, including who is considered to be some of the baddest people on the planet, the SEALs, are involved with this, involved with meditation, involved with all of these mindfulness trainings that I can't see, and I'm going to step up on my soapbox, so I might need a little help here, but I can't see why corporations don't buy into the value sooner. I know that they are.
Oh, so, there are a lot. There are many corporations, and more than ever after COVID, it just spiked up.
It really
because
did,
I feel like mental health finally took, center stage to say, people are not doing well and we need this. So we were seeing more during COVID people wanting this for the burnout, the isolation, because of lockdown and all of the things that were happening. Now I'm seeing it because so many industries were disrupted during COVID and different civil unrest and things that are going on in the world right now. And now I'm seeing it more coming in for the creativity.
Right, right.
And because innovation.
I think as far as I'm concerned, I don't think the creativity piece is just for sales or marketing. I think goes into, let's say, engineering, because we're talking about research and development. If there's that stonewall or that creative block, it's not writer's block, but a creativity block. You're talking about this program being able to be a solution or provide some tools to get through that and on to the next, and then perhaps avoid that in the future by employing these techniques that we're talking about.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And
I'm stepping off my soapbox now. So back to the ground floor. But I absolutely love that. So in your experiences, what are the most common misconceptions about creativity in the workplace?
Well, I think just going back to, I'm not creative, just having that belief system, I'm not creative, so this isn't even for me, because many of us were in kindergarten, right? Painting our finger painting Picasso, and an art teacher came up to us and says, oh, sweetie, I don't think you're an artist and you're not creative, go play sports. And so from 5 years on, we all, most of us identified as not creative because we have a distinction about that word in our minds. Actually, they did a study. They went across the US and they went into kindergarten classes and they said, who here's creative? And every kid raises their hands. Then they go to second grade and they go, who here's creative? Half the kids are raising their hands. And then in sixth grade, three kids are raising their hands. And so it's just really about redistinguishing the word creativity to not be just the artist, the actor, the dancer, the musician, although we love music.
Right.
And it's really about owning your creativity to bring forth something that was not there before and to take your chocolate and your peanut butter, right? Your chocolate being your business and your peanut butter being your creativity, and put it together in a way that's different than anything else out there. You know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Creativity is about taking two wheels that never had a baby and putting them together. And now it's a new, brand new wheel.
Right. That's, I...
So it's just about educating people on the context of what we're creating and what it could provide for a culture.
So we were talking about the two wheels there, and I'm wondering or curious as to how the program encourages collaboration and cross-functional teamwork, which, as we know, is crucial for fostering creative ideas and solutions. How does that go into action?
Well, it's not that we are going in and doing team building, which of course we do, but with this specific program, we are having them meet midweek to do peer-to-peer coaching. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the person, you know, that's in the marketing department and the other person in HR never really talk to each other and get vulnerable together. And all of a sudden they're paired up midweek on a one-on-one where we provide questions that, you know, have to do directly with the module that we're teaching that week. And suddenly they're opening up, the masks are coming off, they're able to get vulnerable, authentic with each other. And there's a bond created, there's a connection created. So through doing this work, they are meeting each other in such a way that's different than, hey, how's the weather? You know, how are your kids passing? Right. Hey, how you doing? By the, you know,
surface conversations, right?
Right. It's actually meaningful conversation.
That, I think that that's where things really grow from that.
Yes.
When that occurs, that's when so many positive, I always say that's where the magic happens, right? And I would truly believe that.
Yep. And they're supposed to be on a call for 30 minutes and yeah, they can have it done in 30 minutes. And some people are busy and some people will stay on that call for hours and create a connection and a friendship with somebody that they work with that they never said more than two words to. And the next thing you know, they want to collaborate and they've got ideas going and bring this to the team. And, you know, they care about each other.
Right.
Because there's been a layer that's been removed. And now they're excited to go to work. And they're happy when they're there because they like the people genuinely who they're working with because they actually know who they are now.
Right. Right. That's the authenticity piece again, which is just so important.
Yep.
You know, in today's world, and I think as far as the economy is concerned, everybody's always looking for ROI, which I have to say, I'll be perfectly honest, I hate that acronym. I absolutely ROI, because it's always associated with dollars and cents.
Sure.
When ROI, just like creativity, just like success, just like healthy, just like so many other words, are relative and it's based on your perception or perspective. However, we do know that in business, the bottom line is oftentimes king. So with the CIJ Culture Catalyst Program, how have you seen when you deliver these programs that businesses are able to measure or track the impact from that?
So we don't go in with an ROI conversation. It does happen on the back end. I think it's a promise that can't always be completely measured and delivered. Mm. What we're really going in there is as soft skills. It's not that we're going in to do business coaching. It's not that we're going to go and, you know, fix all their financial problems. You know, going in there to give the soft skills that will then translate to increase the bottom line. How do they measure that? Well, it's not completely measurable because there's so many variables that are happening in any given time. at a company, I do know that when we came into Prada and it was during lockdown and all of the sales team in East Coast and West Coast that were in our classes came back into the stores. And can you imagine how much fear and trepidation they had? Because it was also during the civil unrest where the stores, the luxury brands were being broken into and vandalized.
Right.
So between COVID happening, all of that, they didn't know what they were going to be walking into. So retention was at an all-time high. People would normally quit at that time. They were staying and sharing that it was because of the mindfulness and emotional intelligence tools that were helping them overcome their fear and anxiety that was actually having them stay. And also their sales increased 82%.
Holy cow. I was going to stop and say just the retention piece was measurable, right? I mean, because that's...
Yes.
That's huge.
Now,
in
is
and
that
of itself.
A direct just to the course? I think the course was a part of that.
Sure.
But there's no coincidence, I don't think.
No, I would have to say that there, it's more than coincidental that those things occur. Because in I know that some of these questions, I know the answers to. So, I mean, just so everybody knows that in full
transparency.
Transparency. I know the answer to these questions.
As a trainer of the Culture Catalyst, Jim, which you are.
Yes. Yes.
And a
I
good
am.
One at that. One of my
Thank
best.
You. Thank you. Thank you. I just do well, I feel it's important for other people to hear it from the person. And I say the creator, so I should rephrase that.
The lead trained the trainer
and somebody who has recreated the program into the Culture Catalyst. I think it's important to hear from that perspective because then it's not just me drinking the Kool-Aid and offering it to everyone else.
Yeah.
But the thing that I have found is through doing these courses, I have found that communications open. There's less closed off communications. There is more camaraderie, more teamwork, more buy-in, and more flow because the whole mentality of we're working as one, it happens more frequently. And that is measurable as somebody from the outside looking in.
Yep.
And I think it is very similar to when somebody's losing weight and they have a partner at home, right? You don't necessarily, that partner doesn't notice it as dramatically as somebody who didn't see it.
Sure.
You know, 2 months, you know, later type of deal. When you look at that person, and go, oh my gosh, you lost 20. It looks like you lost 20 or 30 pounds.
Right.
But when you're inside of it, you're going, eh, maybe it didn't. But as an outsider coming back to those companies, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year later to see the way that people just interact with one another and the successes and the ability to trust is another thing. Because with that and that openness and the transparency and the authenticity, people have an understanding then that person's not my adversary. They're my teammate.
Sure.
Which... And you did hit. It's not necessarily team building. I think team building is a byproduct of
absolutely
the coursework.
Yes.
But
it
distinct is
amazing. From going and getting on a ropes course together.
Yes, exactly. Which no, thank you. That's a broken bone waiting to happen with me.
Yeah.
But it is a wonderful thing, and I know from my perspective to see it, it's very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until somebody actually goes back and does some sort of measurement, whether it be sales volume or it could be retention, where they had a particular group that was a turnover rate of 34%.
Yeah.
46%. There's some of the industries out there that have turnover at that type of retail is one, but manufacturing is another. And one of the companies that I've worked with in going through the program, we have found that the turnover rate went from 42% down to 7. 42 to 7.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously there's buy-in, right? There's buy-in across the board, and there has to be. Like you had mentioned, in the schools where everybody has the same vocabulary, everybody knows what the other person's saying. And then when the new person comes into the organization, which is inevitable at some point in time, then they're, I hate to say indoctrinated, but they are immersed into that immediately. And it is a culture. I guess there's no mistake or accident that it is called the culture catalyst, because it is a catalyst to change. And change can be a bad word to some, and it can be thrilling to others. And when somebody, it's like, this is for like everything else. You get out of it what you put into it.
Yep.
Right? And if you put a lot into it, you get a lot out of it. And I always tell people, because they'll call, and I'm always open to that when somebody is on the fence as to whether or not they should take the course, they'll call and say, well, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
Well, I've got no vested interest in somebody taking the course. And I tell them that you will get out an exponential return from what you put in. And I truly, truly mean that.
Yeah.
So, you know, leave your fear at the doorstep.
Yep.
Leave all of those preconceived notions at the doorstep. Because if you have all of these things in here, there's no room for anything new.
Right.
If you're filled with all the old, there's nothing, there's no room for the new.
Yeah.
And this is new. It's not new in an age sense of you know, measurement, but it is, it's new in a philosophy, or maybe a rebirth is probably more accurate. I think there's probably some of that going on years and years and years ago. And like we mentioned in Mad Men and everything, I don't know when it was or why it was that all of a sudden it became so important, so vital to put on the bullshit front or mask that you're no longer a human being. You're no longer somebody who's open to ideas and different perspectives and everything else. So I just think it's,
well, it's probably came from power and control. when they put us all behind desks and rang bells and put everybody, you know, that's how it started. Just this conformity for people. Here we are breaking out of that, you know?
Yes.
Breaking out of that mold now. And that's what this is about. And the people that are real pioneers, leaders of companies, they see that. And the ones that are just still stuck in the dinosaur age, you know, they're not going to bring a program like this in, and they're going to stay where they are.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say that's sad when that happens. But it happens, right?
It happens.
You're not going to change everybody's idea or opinion on things. But this is one of those things that I started by saying, this is not woo-woo. Actually, it was when we were talking about the Navy SEALs implementing these things. And even if it were, there's enough information and enough data out there that supports the success of these things.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, man, I love it. It's been a life-changing experience for me. And I think it's probably one of the most rewarding things that I can ever hear from somebody that mentions that. Boy, that really changed my life. That changed my professional life. That changed my professional trajectory. I didn't realize that.
Like how it affects them at home. Like I'm more present with my children. You know, my relationship 100%. With my significant other is on fire and blooming again. Like that is unbelievable. Yes. And it's the family and the friends that usually notice, like, and they'll come in week six or seven, they'll go, I bumped into a friend of mine and they're like, you're different. You even look different.
Did you get a new haircut? I don't have any hair.
No, I'm smiling.
Right. You know, and thank you for mentioning that, because that's one of those things that I talk about that, you know, as much as we'd like to compartmentalize things, it's impossible to compartmentalize things.
There shouldn't be any work-life balance. It's work and life all together. Right. It's all one big thing. It's your life.
Yeah. Yeah, that I guess that's the key, right? Life in that. Yeah. That's the connector. That's the bond. I love that. I absolutely love that. So as far as what's going on with you, do you have any new things that are in the works?
Yes, actually, I'm very excited. I'm starting a book publishing company.
Get out of here.
Yes.
How cool is that? That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I as you know, I'm a Hay House published author, and I work with authors, helping them write their books. And I saw a lot of my students struggling because some of them wanted to become also Hay House published authors, or they wanted to be with Random House or Penguin or Simon & Schuster. And, you know, what the climate is about right now is if you don't have at least 100,000 followers, they're not even going to acknowledge you. Because they want authors that are going to help them sell books. So it's becoming very, very difficult to be with one of the big five. So then there's the let me self-publish, which is absolutely fine. But for some of my clients, they also want to be keynote speakers and have more credibility as a coach and an expert. And so, yes, being self-published is admirable, and in some circles, still not quite enough.
Right.
So there's this third choice that's opened up in the last 10 years called hybrid publishing. And so it's still being distributed through a Simon & Schuster or a Penguin Random or Ingram Spark, but the independent publisher is not requiring the social media following that you get a literary agent. Okay. And so, you know, it's helping really tremendous works of art get into the world. So I started a hybrid publishing company where we'll bring in an author, we'll edit their book, do a professional book cover, and then we will navigate and have it distributed through nationwide bookstores in Barnes and Nobles through a professional, one of the big five distribution, big pub houses. So it's called Raven and Grace Press. Awesome. My business partner's name is Raven. She's a book editor and a designer, graphic designer. Wow. And so, yeah, and I will be on, you know, I have a beautiful community that all wants to come in and publish their books, and then she can make them beautiful and edited well and formatted, and then we'll get them out and amplify their voices.
That is amazing. I had no idea that knocked me off my chair when you said that is so cool. I mean, that is so cool.
I'm really excited.
I love that. So here's the thing that I will also say about Jen, because she probably won't say it about herself. She gives back so much, and I'm not talking necessarily writing a check, although she does do that too, but I'm talking about making it possible for other people to carve their niche or make their way in the world and actually fulfill some of their dreams, because this is obviously a dream of some people, is to be a published author.
Yes.
And my God, you have you do that in so many different ways, and it is just heartwarming to me to hear that. I mean that. I mean, I absolutely love that.
Thank you.
And you do it, and I'm sure you don't realize that. I mean, how could you? Because you're not looking for somebody to say, hey, wasn't that nice of me to do that? I'm so nice. No. I mean, that's not who you are. But that is who you are. That is who you are.
Yeah, I want everybody to shine. Room. There's room for all of us to shine. Exactly. There's enough glow to go around.
I love that. Yeah, there. It and that is so true. I mean, even from podcasting, I mean, for me, it was something that I had wanted to do for a number of years, and for whatever reason, just didn't. And then hopped in the Catalyst class for podcasts and did that. And I guess it's no, it wasn't by accident, right? I mean, I was involved with the CIJ Clarity Catalyst, and I was like, gosh, I found that to be incredibly awakening. There was an awakening that happened in me when I took that. And then it was like, oh, you have something for business. I should take that. So then I did that. And then from that, there's a number of offshoots, which is absolutely amazing. And I'm fairly confident you've got probably the most recent offerings on your website, the jennifergrace.com website. Are there? Okay.
Yep. Yeah, and then we'll have up there too shortly. The Raven and Grace website will be going live, but I think in the next few days there'll also be a button that says submissions. We're going to be taking submissions also for collective books, because there are also some of my clients that, you know, they're doing lots of other things and they just don't have time to finish their entire 50,000 word book. So we're going to be doing book collections where each author will write one chapter. And this way they can be a published author. They can get part of their book out into the world, get the credibility as, you know, to be a part of this project and at least have that to their a credit. Our first book is called Heal to Lead, and it's all about how people have turned, you know, their own personal wounds into wisdom and now are stepping into their role as a leader.
You are the queen of catchphrases. Oh my God. Bless
I
had
another one. This is, and I'm also doing
Wounds to Wisdom.
You're going to need to like fly in for this. And we're starting actually a local event here in Nashville called Rhythm and Rhyme. And each month it'll be a different theme. Kind of like Drop the Mic. We're reinventing Drop the Mic. It's called Rhythm and Rhyme, but it's songs, stories, or spoken word all about a certain theme. So our first theme is traumedy, how to laugh at life's biggest lessons.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've been on fire creatively over the last few months, like just creating this new company. And it's always coming from having my ear to the ground and listening to my community. It's like, okay, we did the Clarity Catalyst. What's next? Now I want to get certified. What's next? Okay, now I want to write a book like you, Jen, and do the podcast. Okay, great. Now I need to get the book published. And now I'm having this brick wall. Okay, let me create this for you guys. And so I'm always just listening to what the needs are. I can't finish my book. Okay, let's do a collective book. And each of the collective books is what I love the most. And to your compliment to me of being a giver is all the proceeds, instead of, you know, chopping it up between 20 different authors, will go to a certain charity. We will not take the proceeds at our publishing company. We will donate them to a charity of choice that the people that are authoring the book together select and agree upon. Wow.
How so that's, cool.
Yeah.
Doggone it. That's awesome.
I'm so excited. Awesome. So I'm like down the rabbit hole of, you know, creating all of these flyers and photos and Midjourney and AI. I'm having a ball with all of that too. I'm like sucked in. It's so fun.
Talk about rabbit hole. Yeah, you could definitely spend some time doing that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Holy cow. Midjourney is amazing. You're able to basically take an image that you have in your mind. And I was doing it for Rhythm and Rhyme. I'm like, I want a stage with a brick wall with a guitar and a mic center and then a sign that says rhythm and rhyme. And it created it for me, Jim.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Wow.
In a speakeasy vibe that looks like it's in Nashville. So I give it the prompt and then boom, it's up. I'm actually going to be creating a training for all of the trainers to teach them how to do this.
I love that. That's sign me up. That's awesome.
It'll be free.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, I mean, there you go again. Just giving your stuff away.
Well, I just feel so abundant, you know? And so I feel abundant. I work with really big companies and I've created this life that I pinch myself every morning going, I can't believe that I get to do what I love. And so when it comes to my students and my community, as much as I can give, I do.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And I know that to be true. So that's so cool. I know that we're down to the last couple of minutes here for you. I was wondering, can we talk a little bit about some of the music things? Are you
cool with that?
Okay, fantastic.
Absolutely.
So as part of the show, we always talk at some point or another, we talk about some music. And one of the questions that I love to ask is, what was the first song you fell in love with from the radio?
You sent me that question and I was like, really? I couldn't remember what the first one on the radio, but I do remember having my headphones on and my mother would put on Free to Be, You and Me. It was an album from the 70s. And I would just dance around the living room with wild abandon to that album for hours. And my mother was like, sticking me in front of Sesame Street, she would put the headphones on and I would dance to Free to Be, You and Me.
That is fantastic. And
I'm aging myself here.
You know, I had asked that question to all of the guests so far. And then I started to think about it for myself and I was like going, what was that song? And I mean, like some of them were ridiculous.
You know what? I just remembered what it was. I have a distinct memory, Jim, of being in the car and listening to Crocodile Rock by Elton John. That was my first favorite radio song.
Ooh, that's
awesome.
I
really just had a flash of that. Yes.
Crocodile Rock. I love that.
I remember when rock was young.
Oh, yeah. I could tell you this little side story really quickly. I got my first album, I liked a song from Black Sabbath called Iron Man. I was like, oh, that's really cool. I bought the album, and when I opened up the album, the inside cover scared the shit out of me, and I didn't like it, and I returned it, and that's when you could return albums.
Yes, that's
and I
funny.
Got Elton John's Greatest Hits. It was my very first album that I kept, and there
so
you
I
have
must
it.
Be right with the timing. Yep.
There you go. So, did you have a song that your family would sing along if you guys went on road trips or anything like that?
I don't recall a lot of road tripping. We were an airplane family for sure. Okay. But we would fly to Disney World a lot. That was in Puerto Rico. But my father and my mother were both piano players. And my dad and I used to sing all the Barry Manilow songs. And the one I remember the most singing out loud is, "Oh, Mandy, and you came."
All right.
Came with that taking.
And I need you to stay, Mandy. You have
a way better voice than me.
Oh my gosh. I think everybody was exposed to Barry Manilow at one point or another in their life, especially like in my age group. And I'm older than you. But yeah, man, Barry Manilow had his day. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
So who's tops on your playlist right now?
Taylor Swift, Morgan Wallen, Chris Stapleton. I'm living in Nashville now. I love my country artists and I love my Tay Tay.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But if I get I don't know, if we're going out or something, I might be playing like Biggie and you know, that kind of Brooklyn
vibe. Yeah.
Back in the day, old school hip hop, you know, Tribe Called Quest, and that was like my college days, my high school and college, Beastie Boys, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
I love that.
That was one of those things that we talked about on one of the episodes, and I cut it out, was the exposure to the Beastie Boys when I was in college.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, they were something.
They sure were. Uh-huh.
So you have your favorite artist is Taylor right now?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a favorite song?
I love the song Style, which isn't new, but I really love her new Midnights album. And that song Maroon on it is really good. That's one of my favorites. And also probably even though I love Taylor, I think my favorite song right now that Seb and I are playing like on repeat, my boyfriend and I, is You Should Probably Leave by Chris Stapleton. We are in love with the song right now. So we're always playing it.
Well, Chris Stapleton is incredibly, incredibly talented. Oh, and God. I know that you both have a connection with Mr. Roll too. And Jelly.
And, Jelly Roll.
Yep. Yeah. And his I hate to say rise to fame because it makes it sound like he's an overnight success. And the guy's been around for so long grinding it out. Well, yeah, they did the same thing to Lainey Wilson.
Yeah.
Where, you know, she's an overnight success. She said, overnight success, my ass. I've been doing this, grinding it out for the last 12 years.
Yep.
Playing for free.
Exactly. But
anyway, I want to say thank you again. I really, truly mean it from the bottom of my heart. This has been a wonderful time, and the hour has gone so quickly.
This is so much fun, Jim. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jen. All right, it's just about that time to cue the music for today's episode. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on our latest episodes. I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone for tuning in today. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Drop the Needle podcast. A big thanks to our very special guest, Jennifer Grace, for joining us today. And I invite you to visit www.jennifergrace.com to explore the multitude of offerings Jennifer has for all of you. Plus, head on over to our show notes, where there's a link to the episode playlist. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of the show, this is the end of our show. Until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health, happiness, and the perfect playlist for your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.